The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon. Welcome to Man in Line on Manx Radio. It's another open line today through till one, so the floor's yours. And just a quick word before I start. Police are continuing to appeal for information regarding the whereabouts of a 13-year-old girl from the Kirkmichael area. The constabularies say they're concerned for the welfare of Poppy Thexton. Poppy Thexton is 13 years of age. If you've seen her or you know where she is, you're asked to call the police immediately on 631212 or 999 if it's urgent. They're looking for 13-year-old Poppy Thexton in the Kirkmichael area. And that is a matter of urgency at the moment. If you're in the north or you know her whereabouts, please call the police immediately. 631212. David's first on with us today. Hi, David.
Hi, Andy. I went to the Balcombe School. It's a long time since I've been to school, and it's changed dramatically. But can I say, I was fairly happy with the beginning of the meeting where you could meet the ministers and whatever. And I'm going to give praise to the chief minister too. He came through the door and I said, can I have 2 or 3 minutes with you? No problem. Sat me down and we talked about a private matter, which he's going to look into as well. So that's great as far as I'm concerned, because something needs to be addressed and I've asked him to look at it. And he's the chief minister. And isn't that, where else would that happen?
And I think sometimes, David, I think sometimes we overlook that, the access that we have to politicians. And remember, in many parts of the world, politicians go around with bodyguards. You know, they go around with security. And we're so fortunate here to have access to politicians at that level.
Yeah. The other thing I just want to mention quickly too, the DOI, the minister, Krugel was there, and also his chief executive there, had a few issues there. I said, what's happened to Jeff Robinson, the consultation about large vehicles, camper vans and so forth? Took a lot of information down, and hopefully going to get a response, which we can come back to you on, because it's an opportunity to address things that are not getting anywhere with either civil servants or not anywhere near the top or the minister. You don't need to go to the minister all the time. Chief executives are there and there's other people down the line too who should be addressing stuff, and we should get answers. That's the bit that I don't like.
So I mean, do you think these 4 sessions were worth it?
I do. I do agree with somebody that said the other day that it was like speed dating. And I was told by a former chief minister years ago, if you couldn't get your point over in 5 minutes, forget it. So it was a little bit like that. And I just wonder whether we should have had them sometimes in the daytime. The venue would be difficult, but we did have the villa at one time, which is a big, vast place. But the schools, maybe in the daytime, wouldn't work. We'd have to go somewhere else. But there are other places on the island that can be done. I just want to mention a couple of things too regarding when he said about the Treasury Minister not being there. Andrew Scarfe was there from Garth, who's in the Treasury. Give him praise, chatting to me. We had a little conversation, maybe a little bit private, but maybe sometime it'll come out. But I'll give him the tick in the box on that. But can I also say too, I did the Home Affairs. Dan Davis was fine. Didn't give me all the answers, but he said to me, it's part to do with the Cabinet Office. And that was to do with vaping. Question I asked was, when are we with the bill? When are we getting royal assent? When is the King, who's our Lord of Man, going to sign it off? And where are we going to get protection to protect the children who are vaping? It's been identified all the time in different schools, vaping in school. And the image we want to put out there is, if you do that, it's just like smoking. You're going to end up in hospital. I think that's vaping to me is the new cancer. And I've never smoked. And I'm always going to bang the table and say to things, Health need to get on board as well. I couldn't talk to the health minister there because he had quite a few people around him, and that was the issue. They wanted to start other things going, which was fine.
And what did he mean it's to do with cabinet office?
Because they progress it for royal.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
Get the royal assent, and I went to the cabinet office table because there was nobody there, so there was an opportunity to sit down, and I spoke to the minister, and directly I said, what's happening with the vaping bill, when is it coming into law, when is it going to be publicised, and all these other things before the school holidays come, and they forget about everything. When the school holidays come, they'll forget about them, and then they'll go on holiday, won't they?
Okay, well, you were back at Ballacameen then, so how many marks out of 10 would you give the Chief Minister for these sessions?
No, I'll give it an 8. Honestly, I'll give it an 8 personally to him, because he said to me, no problems, sit down here. We had a chat. There were other people scattering around, and there was an opportunity to talk to him. What we need to do in a few times on that, we don't need always the ministers, but maybe the chief executives could do it in the daytime. You know, make an opportunity, the offices open, come in, or maybe even the chief constable.
Okay.
I'd love to sit the chief constable down and say to him, look, what's happening in the Isle of Man? You're doing great stuff here. You're not doing so well here, and you're not doing so well there. And I said to him, I said to him ages ago about Neighbourhood Watch, and I know people criticise it was curtain twitches, but they provided a function years ago which solved crime very early.
I thought Neighbourhood Watch was going to come back in some way.
Well, I think he did say that. He met the commissioners, no secret, he met the commissioners some time ago, Uncle Commissioners there, and I was pleased with him. I'd marked him a good 9, I would say, even to his face. He was positive, he wanted to do things, but the problem you've got is when we have these, what we call the Eastern Neighbourhood Team with the Northern Team and all these other teams, we never get answers back. Do you know what I mean? I was threatened once, and I'll tell you this for a fact, and it's gospel truth. I was threatened once. I rang the 99, I didn't ring the 999 number up, I rang the ordinary number up. And then you get this forever and a day waiting. So I went to the first contact. There's an option to go to the first contact officer. And the first contact officer, I didn't get his name. That's my fault. And he said to me, you're a politician. That's life. And I was so ashamed that he said that, because people in politics don't have to have these hateful people coming at them. We don't want to be like other parts of the world, do we? When people are threatened and you've got to wear a stab vest or a body cam all the time just to protect yourself.
Yeah, okay.
Come on.
Well, I appreciate
it.
Thanks for calling today. Have a good weekend now. It's 14 minutes past 12. It's Friday, so that means it's archive time, 60th anniversary archive. Monday and Friday, we play some information, some interviews, relevant programming material from our 60-year heritage. After Man in Line today, you're going to hear John Moss in 1991 talking to Brian Blessed, who was on the Isle of Man. That's after Man in Line today. And let's get to the phones now. It's Mike with us now. Hi, Mike.
How you doing, Andy? You all right?
Good, thanks. Yeah, Mike. It's Mike from the taxis, yeah.
It certainly is, yeah. I think most of the issues have now been addressed. I gave an interview, obviously, yesterday to Manx Radio. I was occupied with work commitments on Tuesday and Wednesday, so I was unavailable for comment until yesterday. But Dave was on a couple of days ago. I've listened to the podcast of that, and he gave a very good account of what's been going on with the tariffs, etc. The one thing he couldn't answer, because he doesn't work in the region, was your questions about the Maloo taxis, the airport rank,
yep.
Which is what I'm going to try and endeavour to do now.
Okay.
So I'm not going to go over things that we've already covered, but just what was left unanswered. So you were saying that you believe there's a lack of taxis at the airport. That is untrue, to be honest with you, Andy. There's enough Maloo taxis out there. And I would encourage anybody who thinks that there's a lack of taxis at the airport to look at the flight schedules. Today is a great example. This morning, 9 o'clock and 9:20, there were flights due in. Then there's nothing till 12:40. There's a Dublin flight. This afternoon, between 3:15 and 5:30, there are 7 flights due in. 4 of them are EasyJet flights. So we've got hours and hours without work. And then we have 4 EasyJet flights and some Loganairs and an Aer Lingus as well. There's 7 in total between 3:15 and 5:30. Tuesday, there's about hardly any flights at all. There's two flights at 9-ish, 9:30 in the morning, and there's nothing till 1:30 in the afternoon. So basically what I'm trying to say is it's feast or famine. You can sit there for 3 or 4 hours without any work. Then you get a load of flights coming in. If these EasyJet flights, if one's delayed and one comes in early, you don't even get them with a half an hour or three quarter of an hour spread. You get them all at the same time. So you're going to ask me what's the answer to this?
When you say, I say there's not enough taxis, the perception is, and the feedback I get is, that that there aren't enough taxis. That, of course, the public always wants what the public wants when they want it, and that is maybe the expectation is you come out of an airport and there will be taxis available. There's always, you know, supply and demand, I understand that, and obviously the airport have scheduled the flights around the air traffic controllers, so in the middle of all this is the poor old customer. So, as you say, how do we solve this?
Well, I totally understand that. And from a customer's perspective, if the customer comes out to a taxi rank and there's no taxis there, the first thing is there's not enough taxis. They don't understand that before that flight came in that they were on, that taxis were sitting there for maybe 3 or 4 hours. I've talked to the airport about this as well. I mean, we have good relations now with the airport, and we have contacts that we talk to as well. The issue isn't they don't schedule the flights coming in. The airlines tell them when they're coming in, and you've got the likes of EasyJet scheduling four flights this afternoon within 2.5 hours. You just can't keep up with it. Yeah, it's impossible to do, and it's frustrating for us as well. You know, because you would ideally like a spread where you can go into town. Most of the fares do go to Douglas. You can go into town, you can turn around, go back. You're looking at 40 to 45 minutes turnaround from picking up at the rank and being back down at the rank, which is great. You know, you'd be there for the next one.
So how many taxis potentially are there that could go to the airport?
You would have to ask the RTLC how many registered Maloo taxis there are.
Right.
Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that all Maloo taxis are working that region because of the lack of flights at certain times of the day. If you're wanting to work this morning, for example, or a Tuesday morning, there's no work down in Maloo, so a lot of them have gone to radio providers and they're working as private hires in the town.
Right.
That's another issue, but that's a separate issue. Now, to answer your question, who can pick up at the airport? Maloo taxis can sit and ply for hire on the rank at the airport. If there are no taxis at the airport and there are people standing at the pole waiting for a taxi, any licensed ply for hire taxi, not a private hire, private hires can't pick up anywhere on the streets, they're not licensed or insured to do so, but any ply for hire taxi that drives through the airport while there's people waiting at that pole is entitled to pick them up. There's no issues with that. They are, however, not entitled to sit on the Maloo rank and wait for people to come out the front of the terminal building. Right. If there's no people waiting there, they can't stop. No ifs, buts or maybes. But so that's how it works. But there is that in legislation that if there is no Maloo taxis on the rank and there's people waiting there, any Douglas, Northwest or whatever taxi can pick up as long as they're apply for hire taxi. The difference in apply for hire, there is a license on the back of the vehicle and a taxi sign generally on the roof or in the window. A private hire has a yellow disc, usually on the left-hand side of the windscreen at the top or the bottom. If it's got a yellow disc and you're hailing a taxi on a Saturday night or even down at the airport, if it stops for you, I would advise you not to get in it. There's no insurance, and he's not licensed to pick you up.
Okay.
unless it is a pre-booked fare.
Okay, so in words of one syllable, Maloo taxis can sit on the rank at the airport. Anybody else that's ply for hire can cruise round and see if there's nobody there.
Basically, if there's no taxis there and they drop off, they can pull in and
right.
pick up if there's people waiting there. Or if you are coming back from Port Erin and you look over the hedge and you see people standing at the post, then you can pull in and pick up, but you can't wait on the rank. That's the basics of it.
Okay. All right. Well, I appreciate
normally
that.
Normally speaking, like I say, there's a 40 to 45 minute turnaround, so people generally don't have more than a 15 minute wait on the rank anyway if taxis are on the way back. There's, you know, most people are cleared relatively quickly, Andy. Yeah.
Okay, well, it's going to be a fairly hot hour or so, because what is it, the 12:40 Emerald's coming in from Dublin, 1:15 Loganair from Manchester, 1:30 Loganair from Liverpool, so it'll be a busy hour or so there.
It will, but that's a busy hour, but that's normal. Those sort of things can be dealt with. Look at 3:15 to 4:30. That's when that's when the stuff hits the fan sort of thing, because there's four easy jets at that time, and there's three other flights as well. And normally, if you monitor that this afternoon, which I'd encourage you to do, we're probably going to find that there's going to be some delays along the line. The Bristol might come in early and the Gatwick might come in late, etc., etc., and you end up with everybody coming out of that terminal building at once.
Okay, all right, appreciate that, Mike.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for clearing. Good to hear from you. It's 22 minutes past 12 on Manx Radio. I mentioned that Brian Blessed is on after Man in Line today as part of our 60th anniversary celebrations. And a note in from Texter 470, only 4 weeks left until TT Fortnite starts. Yes, it is. 4 weeks today. Practice starts at the pre-TT at Billown, Friday 24th of May, 4 weeks today. And the Texter 470 says, fortnight to go until TT Fortnite starts. 4 weeks until TT Fortnite starts. And the island's looking a mess for a start. The airport looks run down. You got the Quarterbridge pub, which is a complete, total eyesore. And people will be standing around the Quarterbridge pub for hours. Absolutely hours on race days and practice days. And there it is. looking out like sightless eyes. An eyesore. And not forgetting Douglas Key as well, says 470. Thanks also to travelling from Ramsey to Douglas yesterday. I noticed contractors were painting the black and white chevrons along the pavement for the TT, says Steve on 595. Could the contractor go back and repaint the larger chevrons at Quarterbridge? They did them in the rain and the paint's all washed off. It looks scruffy, bearing in mind lots of photos are going to be taken around the area in the weeks and weeks to come. And it's Dewan. Hi, Dewan.
Another week is on us, Andy, at the end of another week.
It is. And it's a gorgeous day. What's the weather like in Florida?
It's really nice, actually. We've not got humidity. It's nice, 82 degrees in the daytime, but no humidity at night. So really nice at the moment. That probably won't last for long. Normal temperatures, we'll presume. I had a phone call from an older lady there the other day who was at the road show. And she was saying, oh, the presentation was good, and the show was good, and the parking was good, she said. But she said the best thing was the clowns. I said, she was at the circus, Andy. She got it mixed up. She'd gone to Gandhi's.
Right. Oh, crikey.
Yeah. She thought she was at the road show. So is Christian going to the after party? Because normally when they have a run at the Gaiety Theatre, they have an after party, don't they?
Christian didn't get that far. He was far too busy chatting to all the Christian fans there.
Oh, he's had no invite to the after party. Oh, never mind. I'm just going on to a subject that I have quite a bit of, which is the farming. And I'm looking at a job description, which is coming off Glassdoor, but I believe it's on quite a few different sites in England, for a farm carbon engagement officer. Passionate about sustainability and climate smart agriculture, and this is to help farmers online farm carbon calculator, and it's a £41,000 a year job. So much for slimming down government, another position which was never there before, I suppose. Free access and support to counselling and emotional support. I suppose that's when the farmers tell them to mind their own business. Two pension arrangements, salary increase after 12 months, 21 days holidays increased after 1 year and 3 years. So there's a good job. But you know, the kicker of it is, I'm just looking at the bottom of the comments, and this is a national advert, and the cons of the job. On the whole, however, good people to work with. The diligent ones visibly pick up on the slack for the shirkers. Some managers who have never been managed properly and lacking the skills to manage past their own ego. Senior career civil servants managing highly technical and specialist fields, but unwilling to adequately resource their teams. Constant change in direction by senior management.
And where's this advert?
Well, it's in numerous places, but the one I'm picking it up from, which is a mirror of everyone else's, is glassdoor.com. It's an Alamann government advert, 3.9 star, advertising the job.
My word.
My question is, again, how much will has government got to actually help farmers rather than this, like, utter net zero road that they're taking us down, which is going to cost us all probably food security and certainly going to cost us a lot of money? And the question they ask is, actually, what for? You know, have we got any massive changes on the Isle of Man that we're going to have to go down this road?
Well, everything. I mean, it's fair to say that the green agenda, the sustainable living agenda, is part of mainstream politics nowadays, isn't it, June?
It is, but, you know, like everything else, the figures get so much distorted. And I think the green goddess of education, Daphne Kane, made a comment at one of the roadshow events the other day when a question was asked, I believe by Julian, so he might be able to top up on this. And she came out with the classic 97% of scientists, blah, blah, blah. But the question I have to ask is, how many is 97%? Did they ask 100 scientists? And 97% of them are in favour. So it's a very open point that she's trying to cling on to figures with. So, you know, the question I ask, and thousands of people around the world are asking the same question, is we are going to get climate change, but is that down to us? And, you know, are we going to destabilise our natural farming society to put these figures in and all these here jobs and again, another layer of bureaucracy for farmers to sort out?
Okay. All right. Have a good weekend, Ewan. Good to hear from you.
Will do. Take care, Andy.
All right, so 28 minutes past 12, message in from Derek, who just said, one question we need to ask ourselves regarding climate change is, how much notice do the Chinese take of climate change, bearing in mind that China is going to be the biggest military and economic threat to the West, except nobody seems to be talking about it? How much notice does China take of all this, I wonder? I agree with David, says Viv. The roadshow at Ballacombeen was excellent. All of the ministers I spoke to were receptive, and a lot of reassurance was given that things were being addressed behind the scenes. Moving forward, we need to have more communication from government on issues which are concerning the public, says Viv. I'll be honest with you, the communications I've had regarding these roadshows, these listening to you events, have all been uniformly positive about the fact that it's great to see ministers, it's good to engage with ministers, and it's an important point that that David made. If you can't get your point over in a few minutes, really, then how are you going to get your point over? So speed dating it may be, I wouldn't know, I've never speed dating it may be, but if it works, isn't that a good thing?
Hello, I'd like to rent a car for 3 days. Just something reasonable.
No problem at all. We've just a few rules. You can't go off island, you can't smile in the car, you can't take any friends. Oh, and it's £10,000 a day.
Renting a car doesn't need to be difficult or expensive. With prices from just £50 per day and now collection and drop-off at the airport and Douglas, speak to Rex Rental Company or book online at rexrental.im.
Rex Rentals. I'm so glad to hear that.
When you need a fitting memorial or headstone for a loved one, contact Manx Memorials in Peel. This long-standing family-run Manx company offer a wide range of granite and marble headstones and memorials, along with an island-wide inscription and renovation service. Manx Memorial's skilled professionals will take the time to help you choose a suitable memorial, and we're proud to say we'll beat other local quotes. Call 843 861 or email matthew@manxmemorials.co.uk.
Construction waste today.
Tells recycle for another day.
A builder's skip or two.
Tells skips will bring to you.
At Tells Skip Hire and Waste Disposal in Snugborough, you only pay for the waste you bring. For waste disposal and skips, give us a call on 677 137. That's 677 137. Visit Tells today or find Tells Limited on Facebook.
Call Tells Skips today.
677 137.
After another roller coaster season of ups and downs, highs and lows, the 2023-24 campaign comes to an end for FC Isle of Man on home soil this Saturday. The Ravens face Lower Breck at the Bowl this weekend with the chance to end their latest league adventure with a top 10 finish. Join me, Rob Pritchard and Tony Meppen for FC Isle of Man versus Lower Breck, kicking off at 6 p.m. this Saturday. Manx Radio will be providing full live match commentary on our DAB and AM 1368 channels. Live coverage of FC Isle of Man on Manx Radio is supported by Selton, investing in our community.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
Pastor Mike, good afternoon. Thanks for tuning in today. Just a quick word. You know, we sometimes broadcast Radio Caroline at weekends, and indeed, it's the 60th anniversary of both Manx Radio and the old Radio Caroline North, which is anchored off Ramsey on Bahama, above Bahama Bank in Ramsey Bay, for about 4 years. And sad just to say that one of the stalwarts of Radio Caroline North has passed away. He died last Friday at the age of 88. Graham Webb, who was big on Radio Caroline. In fact, he conducted, I think he was the man who commentated on the wedding. There was a wedding on board. Jan Terrett married one of the DJs, Mick Loves It, live on air in the 1960s, and Graham was commentating on it there. He later went on to be working on Radio Australia. And he worked in Australia, and I think he was a doyen of the two-way family favourites set. So let's remember him. Graham Webb, formerly of Radio Caroline North, and off Ramsey for a few years in the 1960s. Mark, this is just something regarding the fact that hospitality venues seem to be falling by the wayside. Is it possible there are too many cafes, says Mark. Strand Street's full of them, as are many other locations around the Isle of Man. Some may come and some may go. Perhaps this is the Darwinian nature of capitalism in action. Best regards, Mark. Thank you, Mark. And Julian's on now. Hi, Julian.
Hi, Andy. How you doing?
So did you ask that question?
Yes. There was a couple of questions, actually, that I had. Just to reiterate before, David and Julian, you know, the actual... I think the roadshows work quite well. I think Chief Minister controlled the room well too. A natural compere, I would say. He did very well, and everyone got a good time to talk about things. Just going on what June was just saying, that farm carbon engagement officer, I wonder why we need that when we've got the UK's Agriculture and Horticulture Development Board, which Rebecca Meir, who is currently the managing director of the meat plant, are saying that the majority of the smaller farms are about 95% less emitting than what the IPCC is saying. So I wonder if we actually need a carbon engagement officer if the Isle of Man is basically not emitting anywhere near what the targets are. I mean, I think we've probably exceeded them about 200 years ago. Another point, I did hear about that 97% of scientists. It's interesting that the latest report from the IPCC has been authored by 270 scientists. So those are the scientists that are prepared to put pen to paper on the IPCC report. But interestingly, the Clintel organization, which has got Nobel Prize winners, lots and lots of scientists, you can't even get on without PhDs in climate-related things like astrophysics and atmospheric chemistry. There are 1,917 of those, which is seven times the number of authors in the IPCC report. So if we're talking about 97% of scientists, as Dewan says, percentage of what exactly? If we've got nearly 2,000 of them saying there is no emergency, and you've got 270 saying there is, well, you know, I don't like consensus very much, but if we're going to talk about numbers, you know, got to ask the question.
Mm.
Okay. I was just quickly, before I talk about my main thing, I was interested to read the Green Life section of last week's Courier newspaper. I was particularly interested in a couple of articles written by Rhian Evans of Manx Radio. For example, her article titled Conversations with a Climate Change Denier, where she suggests ways to handle conversations with conspiracy theorists, etc. I would suggest that perhaps there's a missing part to the title of her article. The bit missing is man-made climate change. I don't think anybody denies that climate has and always will change. It's just a case of why and proving that. another article, she says, the grass will no longer be green, it will be brown and dry or soaking wet because it's underwater or gone altogether or on fire. As just for that last point about fire, we had a conversation about this. It's been 21 years since the Bradderhead Fire Report recommended cutting fire breaks and controlling with gorse burning. Not just at Bradder, but all across the island. That doesn't seem to be happening, does it, Andy?
Are they doing it, though? I mean, because we only ever hear of grass fires. It's normally some idiot who's left a portable barbecue there. So
exactly.
Grass doesn't spontaneously combust in our climate. So I didn't know they weren't cutting the fire breaks back.
I've not seen anything. I mean, I've been over Bradder in recent times, many, many times, and I'm not seeing any fire breaks being cut. All they've got is rather overgrown footpaths. So, you know, if a gardener decides to throw a load of petrol on some grass waste and throw it over the wall and set light, it'll just all happen again. Now, my main point, I noticed in that Green Life, the little section in the Courier, there were 9 mentions of the acronym ESG, which stands for Environmental, Social and Corporate Governance. And I asked this question at the Ballacameen Roadshow. ESG is basically a top-down initiative from what you might say unelected elites like the World Economic Forum, who invite world leaders to their pop-up extravaganza in Davos, is the only thing you can say, with lots of champagne and caviar and steaks and things. But ESG is not the result of bottom-up demand from individual investors or consumers or workers. You know, there's no taxi drivers or hospitality people demanding to get rid of their oil and gas boilers, as far as I know. But recently there was an interesting Wall Street Journal article titled ESG, the new dirty word on Wall Street. And they're reporting that 3/4 of American investors have suddenly withdrawn all their investments in ESG companies because of its poor performance against non-ESG companies and the negative knock-on effects for small businesses from hospitality to farming and many others. That's a quote. I also, a statement from Daphne Kane when I was speaking to her, she said that the Manx government is following ESG targets. So this begs the question, why is the Isle of Man still rowing towards the ESG waterfall when everyone else is paddling in the opposite direction? I think we were better off when we went our own way. I'm not sure. Do you not think it's time for a rethink if ESG has become a dirty word on Wall Street?
I was reading an interesting article, I think it was in the Times or the Telegraph the other day, talking about the way that politics is going and the fact that technocrats seem to be finding their way into looking, you know, sorting out policy, and they were questioning whether, you know, grassroots politicians had any stake in the future, which I find a bit off-putting, to be quite honest.
Yeah, I mean, Dewan mentioned a while ago that some of the politicians here may be signing off on things that they're not really looking at. And an interesting statistic was, if you go back, say, to when Microsoft had their first prospectus when they were looking to become a public company, they had about 60-odd pages on their prospectus. If you look at ESG companies, they've got over 400 pages with at least 150 pages devoted to ESG disclosure information. It almost looks like you're drowning potential investors in data rather than information. I mean, for example, if you've got an iPhone or a Samsung and you get an update, it says read the terms and conditions. Well, are you going to scroll through 1,000 pages of terms and conditions?
I think they do that on purpose, Julian. All this, you know, as you say, check the terms and conditions, you'll fall asleep before you get past page 3.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting that statistically, the largest companies are doing the best on their ESG scores. So is it that they just learned how to game the system? You know, if you do it enough times, I mean, I think it's like a 15-page thing talking about, you know, have you got gender-neutral bathrooms and, you know, have you got a heat pump in the place? You know, this type of things. I mean, large companies have large HR departments that are able to handle all these questions, whereas you know, the smaller businesses, you know, they haven't got time for messing about with all this paperwork pushing.
Okay. All right. I've got to go. Julian, yep. Thanks for calling today. Have a good weekend now.
You too, Andy. Thank you.
Thanks for that. A note from Nick on WhatsApp, who Nick 970 WhatsApp says, following what I heard earlier, can we all agree that 97% of scientists will agree with the people that are funding them? Oh, I see. Beastie's on. Hi, Beastie.
Hello, Andy. We were talking the other day about using cash.
Yes.
And how important it was that the cards didn't take over. And I had an interesting incident the other day I thought I'd like to tell you about. I was at the checkout and I put the money down, cash obviously, and the person on the checkout said, "Oh, I can't take those, they're not legal tender," pointing at £2 notes. And I said, "What are you talking about, the Hermaxtown notes?" "Well, I've never seen them before. I can't take those." And eventually we got the issue resolved when she got a supervisor come over. She did actually say at one point, "Well, there's nowhere in the till to put them." Anyway, the point being that a lot of people haven't actually seen the pound note, especially people who are recent people on the island. And whenever I use a pound note, the reception I get is usually, "Oh, a pound note, haven't seen one of those for ages." Now, I think the reason why they're, I wouldn't say going out of circulation, but you don't see them that much, is that if people do use cash, and thank you everybody who does, they usually get their money from the hole in the wall.
Yeah.
And of course you don't get pound notes from the hole in the wall.
I can't remember the last time I saw a pound note, Beastie.
Well, come past my house. I'll show you a few because, as I've said before, each month I go into the bank face-to-face and draw the amount of money that I anticipate I'm going to spend that month. And I always get about 50 quid's worth of pound notes.
And do you ask for pound notes?
Yeah, and they've always got them. I mean, they're just... Okay. Just ordinary currency. But because you can't get them from the hole in the wall, because you have to go in to get them, but they're always there. I mean, they're just pound notes. But I use them all the time, and people are always delighted to see them. So I would encourage anybody that is thinking, "Well, I haven't seen a pound note for ages." Next time you want some cash, if the bank happens to be home, just pop in.
Yeah.
And instead of getting a £20 note, get 21 pound notes. Let's get them back in circulation, because they're there. They're there. And they're great, and people do love them, especially in 4 weeks' time. You know, people just love to see them. They really do.
The Manx pound note. Well, 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 well.
The Manx pound note,
and
yes.
Do you get them in... I can't remember the last time I got them in change, being in a shop. I don't think people hand out pound notes anymore,
well,
in shops.
When I use a pound note to purchase something, which is more often than not, I always say, "Make sure you give it back in change, won't you?" And I tend to use certain shops, and they know me now, you know, and I say, "You're getting them pound notes back in change," and hopefully they are, because it puts a smile on people's faces, you know, when they see them. I just hope that the pound notes that I'm using, for instance, in the supermarkets, where you don't get quite the same personal attitude with them, that they're not just sticking them at the bottom and then putting them back in the bank. I hope that they are putting them back in circulation. But they probably aren't, because it's just too much hassle, isn't it?
Okay, so the word for today is circulate your pound notes.
Go into the bank, ask for the pound notes, keep them in circulation. I wouldn't say they're alive and kicking, but they are alive, and they are asking to remain alive. And do we want them? Do we want them to remain?
And it's fair to say that 5 £1 notes in your pocket weighs a lot less than 5 pound coins.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks for that, Beastie. Appreciate it.
Okay, keep using your cash.
Thank you.
Everybody.
It's a quarter to one now. Friday lunchtime on Man in Line. Peel is the venue for this weekend's Beach Buddies cleanup event. Meet at 10:30 on the harbour end of the prom this coming Sunday. There was a big number of new volunteers last weekend for the special Earth Day event at King William's College with the Buchan School. 24 new faces and lots of families taking part and enjoying themselves. So Beach Buddies this Sunday, the harbour end of the promenade, just for an hour and a half or so, 10:30 till midday. Everything is provided. They've got all the insurance and everything. Just go along. And if you've never been to a Beach Buddies event, make this Sunday the first one in Peel. Have a good time.
We appreciate that running a business can be a challenge and presents risks. At NFU Mutual, 100 years of insurance experience has taught us a lot. We pride ourselves on our local service and having real conversations with you to understand your unique needs and find the right cover for you. NFU Mutual work hard to ensure that claims are handled efficiently with minimum hassle to get you back to normal as soon as possible. For business insurance, call NFU Mutual on 674 191.
Customer satisfaction and quality have been a priority at Milcreasts for over 60 years. We're proud to represent the great car manufacturers, Jaguar, Land Rover, Vauxhall, Mitsubishi, Subaru and Isuzu, and have taken time to build up the trust and respect of both car makers and drivers. 100% independent and Manx-owned for new and approved used cars, leasing, servicing, parts and superb customer service. Milcreasts. It's what's behind us that keeps us in front.
Discover a fabulous range of watches, gifts and jewellery at Ramsey Art Gallery with top brand watches from Bulova, Citizen Eco Drive and Storm to Acuras, Seconda and Timex. Plus, all watch purchases come with free lifetime watch bracelet adjustment service. There's stunning gold and silver jewellery, gifts for all occasions and of course a fabulous gallery of limited edition prints and original artworks. Find all this and more at Ramsey Art Gallery, Jewellers and Engravers, opposite Ramsey RNLI shop.
Yes, it's Guild time again, and from 10 o'clock on Saturday morning and right throughout the following week, the Villa Marina will become the home of the Manx Music, Speech and Dance Festival. But what's it really like?
It's the most supportive environment, it's the most loving environment, it's the most nerve-wracking environment, and I'm just so proud of them all.
Bite-sized breakfast reports, supper at 9 with an hour of Guild highlights, and you can binge on YouTube videos and podcasts just by going to manxradio.com.
Oh dear, I don't think that's supposed to happen.
Manx Radio, your complete Manx Music Festival station.
So, all good in the end.
The Man in Line with Andy Wint.
12 minutes before one. Afternoon, Andy, says Pete's on 722. I've got £12 notes in my wallet. How about that? I didn't know. I can't remember the last time I had a Manx pound note. And if you only get them from the bank, they're not trying to get rid of them, are they? It's not a conspiracy, is it? Bonzo's on now. Hi, Bonzo.
Yeah, hi. Just to, which is not what I'm actually calling about, but just to respond about this cash thing. Obviously, a pound note is rather more expensive to produce than a pound coin.
Is it?
Well, yes, because a note will have to have security features, watermarking, etc. And if they're relatively limited run, which our pound notes would be, then I'm not quite sure what the sort of metallic content of the pound coin is, but I'm sure as a pressing, etc., an industrial pressing, it would cost less than actually producing a note.
Okay,
so that's why you have notes nowadays, and I think you'll find as the notes wear out and go out of circulation, you'll find that you will only be able to have.
It's so long ago since I had a Manx pound note, I can't remember what the watermark was or whether there's a metallic strip in there.
Yes, I think there's a metallic strip in the more recent ones, and there's a watermarking in.
They do fulfil, but they do fulfil a very sort of fundamental function for the Isle of Man, Bonzo.
Well, yes. I mean, if they wanted to actually print these things as, you know, collector's items, etc., and then sell them for £10, well, fine. Mm. But producing them, to replace pound coins, no, it's just too expensive.
But they do baffle. They do baffle German bikers. Anyway, that wasn't why you called.
No. Yes, Duran and Julian, you know, still flying in the face of reality with their views that they purport to be fact more often than not on the climate crisis and the climate damage that we're facing at the moment. The idea that somehow it is all some kind of bizarre left-wing green agenda conspiracy driven by the, strangely enough, right-wing capitalist World Economic Forum to establish some kind of world government to take everyone's freedom away is just a complete load of tosh. Utter nonsense. Think about these lunatic fantasies if they want, but parading them around as fact is nonsense. Nobody talks. I notice they ignore completely the fossil fuel agenda, or the companies who are pressing for limiting any action on climate damage, because, of course, it would affect their profits, etc. Again, flying in the face of reality.
But how do you address the Chinese and Indian questions with this, and the fact that they, with a flick of their finger, they use far more fossil fuel in a day than we use in a year?
Yes, and some of that is fossil fuel use that we have exported to them in order to make stuff. Which is one of the reasons why they often turn round, both countries, and say, excuse me, why are you saying it's our fault? You want us to make this stuff. Where do you think it comes from? Magic beans? No, it involves actually having to expend energy to do it. And in order to give it to you at the costs that you think it should be, that's how it works. But the Chinese at the moment are working very hard, especially on flood management, because they're a nation prone to flooding anyway, but it is just getting far, far worse. And indeed, I think somebody was mentioning that about 95% of all the world's scientific papers on flooding and flood management come from China. So they are pushing on renewables like mad, but they are going to have a point where they're going to have to, in order to output all the stuff that we want to have, they are going to have to use fossil fuels for the moment. But that's not their intention. Of course, China, now that's by far and away the largest producer of electric cars. But just closer to home, about climate damage. If you're going on your holidays in southern Europe, you might want to have to think about your inoculations, because mosquito-borne diseases are spreading, particularly in southern Europe, due to climate breakdown. A report just issued by one Professor Rachel Lowe, who leads the Global Health Resilience Group at Barcelona Supercomputing Center, has warned mosquito disease outbreaks are set to spread over currently unaffected parts of Northern Europe, Asia, North America, and Australia over the next few years. But though the areas which the dengue fever mosquito cover in southern Europe now are in Italy, elements of southern France, southern Spain, Greece, etc.
And the Canary Islands as well.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, we've got to go, Bonzo. Thanks for calling today. Have a good weekend. Cheers.
Bye.
Now, 6 minutes before, one was standing by for Brian Blessed in our 60th anniversary retrospective. Thanks to Ben on the phones today. We're still looking for Poppy Thexton, that 13-year-old in Kurt Michael. 631212 if you know anywhere or anything about Poppy.
W-I-N-T.
60 years serving you as the nation station. This is Manx Radio.
He's larger than life, louder than most, and when he elected to climb the highest mountain on Earth, Brian Blessed came to the Isle of Man to make sure he was authentically dressed, because he wanted to do the climb in the same style and use the same material that was worn by the early climbers, in particular, George Mallory. And that meant coming to Timbald Mills, where Mallory came for his kit, mostly tweed in those days. Blessed had the option of wearing something that was still in keeping but more modern, but he decided against that, as he told me.
I knew in my heart the mountain would be very kind to us, because I knew it'd be kind to me because we were going there for the right reasons. We weren't going there to dig up bodies. We weren't going there to find Mallory's body and Irving's body. It's the last thing we wanted. We're there to really pay tribute to these great climbers. And for the mystery, we weren't there to solve the mystery, whether they climbed it or not. As you know, Mallory disappeared and Irving disappeared in 1924, about 800 feet from the summit when they were last seen. We're there really to kind of find their spirit, not their bodies. And we felt that mystery is a rare commodity these days.
You were dressed up in tweeds, of course.
I was dressed up.
How did they stand up to it?
The Manx Loom people, they'd made these tweeds for me and trousers and all that. And I can tell you this, that amazingly, I had backup modern material that was made to look... Finch in 1922 made the first duvet jacket and duvet trousers, thank God. And so therefore, I could have used that kind of thing modeled on his if I'd have wanted to. But amazingly, I kept in the 22 gear that the Manx people had made. What you never get about Everest, first of all, it is a wonderful mountain. It is a glorious mountain. It is incredible. It is bewitching and beguiling and low. It has touches of Moby Dick, I think, in it as well, like for Mallory, and it urges you on. I mean, I would say goodbye to a million King Lears to do something like that. It was so wonderful and exciting. I've never known such emotions, I've never known such excitement, I've never known such love, and it was just wonderful, and David Brashears was wonderful. When you see Everest from the northern side, what you don't get on photographs and television, it's foreshortened, it's made flatter. In actual fact, when you see from the northern side, the first thing that hit me when I first saw it, because it was in red sunlight from 150 miles away, is it's so steep. It's so steep.
Part of Island life for 60 years. This is your Manx Radio.